Hi everyone, Jordan here.
And I'm Maya, and we're going to be talking this episode about why the brothers should have been caught that first night.
Yeah, like honestly, they should have been caught on the same night. Like, it's not even funny. It's like, the more you look into it, it's just a joke that the Beverly Hills Police Department didn't figure it out straight away.
So, as we discussed in our little brief overview, on August 20th, in the year 1989, the Menendez brothers killed their parents. And there's some things about the crime scene that should have been a pretty big clue to the police that someone within the house had committed this crime. Jordan, do you want to talk about that?
When it comes to the crime scene itself, the fact when it comes to domestic homicides, you look at the people who have access to the home first and people who live in the home. So the fact that the police just dismissed the brothers being responsible straight away because they were traumatized, it's kind of ridiculous. I don't really understand why the police just sort of let them go. Because that's essentially what happened, isn't it?
Yeah. From my understanding and from the testimony of the officers, they saw them as being completely traumatized by having found their parents. And so they dismissed them as being the ones to have done it. But the other thing that I've read, and I think this was brought up in the trial too, is that often with domestic homicides, the person who calls the police is the one who is responsible. Even if they don't say that they did it, it's typically that's how it goes.
I think Anne Burgess actually says that in her testimony as well, that you should look at the person who calls the crime in straight away.
Right. And typically with a police investigation like this, they would start with the inner circle and then make their way out.
Yeah, that's like a commonly held thing, isn't it? In detective work, you look at the people on the inside first, then you sort of work your way out from there. I genuinely want to know how these police were trained.
Right, I get that, the brothers were traumatized because, as we know, they actually were traumatized. But the fact that they saw that and just immediately dismissed them as suspects is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. I say another clue that they were responsible is the extreme overkill. You don't just get... Okay, let's go with the theory that was circling at the time, that it was a mob hit. You don't get a crime scene like that from a hit. Isn't the mafia sort of killings, that's like the bullet to the back of the head, right? Usually a limited amount of shots because they don't want to be heard.
Right, because that's what people do when they plan crimes.
Exactly. They sneak up on the person.
They try not to be heard. If they genuinely thought it was a mob hit, the mob doesn't use shotguns, do they?
I don't know. I always thought of it as being
little handgun thing.
That's the mafia with the handgun, but
right, I don't know, The Godfather or something. I've actually never seen that movie, but
I think they do use shotguns in The Godfather.
Oh,
so I don't know.
People like to talk about how brutal this crime scene was and how they were shot so many times and Kitty was unrecognizable, things like that.
Kitty was wearing white. She was covered in blood. Jose, he had a shotgun blast to the back of his head, blood everywhere. There was brain matter on the ceiling, on the windows. It was really horrendous.
To me, and to most forensic psychologists, that's just a huge indication of the amount of emotion and, you know, in my opinion, fear and probably anger as well that went into it. And that it wasn't something that was cold and calculated, because if it was cold and calculated, they would not have shot as many times. Oh, and also that there was no break-in attempt.
Yeah.
Or no evidence of a break-in.
There's no forced entry anywhere. Like, even, I think Zola even says in his testimony that he knew pretty much straight away that there was no signs of a break-in at all.
Right.
Which makes me think, how did he not suspect the brothers straight away then?
Right. Like, if no one broke into the house, then they had to know the person. And who do they know that's right there, that's traumatized?
Yeah. And I think Zola says that, like, they knew that they would have had to have let the person in, whoever committed this crime. So what did Zola think? Like, Jose and Kitty walked up to the door, saw people in front of them holding shotguns, went back into the tent. Okay, maybe that's a bit of a stretch, because I guess you could just argue that, oh, well, the person that they let in hid the shotguns. I don't know.
But it's a shotgun.
But
that's the thing that always gets me about the crime scene. It's like, what did they think happened?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering as well. Like, as a detective, if you saw this crime scene, like, what would you think? I mean, me as a normal person, if, like, take the example of two parents murdered on a summer's night in Beverly Hills. You see the crime scene. I would think this has got to be, like, a family member or someone who's had access to the house straight away. I don't understand how Zola didn't work it out straight away.
My personal belief is that he really had absolutely no clue. Because I feel like if that was even in his mind, then he would have, you know, the GSR test and stuff like that. The gunshot residue test.
Yeah. I mean, that pretty much
proved that they had shot shotguns that night.
Yeah.
And they would have been arrested that night.
I guess that's kind of everything to do with, like, the first look at the crime scene. So, like, the police officers arriving at the scene, those are the things that they would look at initially to be able to tell that it's probably someone who lives or has access to the house that is responsible for this. But, I mean, their alibi is another thing in its entirety. Oh my, like...
Okay, when I learned that they didn't actually have movie tickets, they just told the police that they had gone to the movies and they believed them, I was like, what kind of police work is this?
The incompetence of the Beverly Hills Police Department, ladies and gentlemen.
That's another thing that I think shows that the police genuinely had no idea it was them. Because if they, like, even, I have no police training. If someone tells me, oh yeah, my alibi is that I was at the movies, I'm going to ask for the movie ticket.
Yeah, where's the movie tickets?
So, Lyle testified that he actually did have plans with a friend that night named Carrie Parker to go to the movies to see a movie called License to Kill. Is that right? No.
Yeah, it was License to Kill, I think. Yeah.
No, I think it was Batman, because...
Oh, it was Batman, yes, sorry. Yeah. Because the brothers tried to get movie tickets to see License to Kill when they were at the movie theater. That's what it was.
Right, because they didn't want to get tickets for the movie that they had had plans for because they knew that their friend was there.
Yeah, and they knew that their friend would say Lyle, like, never showed up.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's another thing I think that speaks to, like, how they didn't have this plan beforehand. Because if they had made a plan before they killed their parents to say, we're going to say we were at the movies, why would they do that when they already had someone who was at the movies who could say that they weren't there?
Exactly.
It makes no sense.
If Carrie Parker had just called the police and said, oh, I heard the Menendez brothers' parents were killed. Lyle said he was supposed to meet me at 8 p.m. on that night, but he never showed. Right there, the police would have been like, oh, the brothers are responsible.
Right.
There's just too many things that are inconsistent with a planned crime.
Even the Perry Berman stuff that... But what they told the police was that they had gone to see, to meet a friend, Perry, at this wine tasting festival after the movie, but they had missed their friend, Perry. So they called him, and the call was made more than an hour after the parents were shot. And then they decided to meet him at a restaurant, and then they needed to get Eric's ID, so they went back to the house and discovered their parents. But according to the brothers' testimony, what actually happened is after they shot their parents, they had dumped the guns, tried to buy movie tickets, but were unable to, and then went to try to meet Perry, but they had missed him because they had shot their parents. And so then they called him and wanted to meet at a restaurant, but they were starting to get extremely emotional and, like, overcome with the fact that they had just shot their parents. So they didn't meet Perry and went back to the house instead.
And they were supposed to meet Carrie at 8 p.m. They had, or Lyle had made plans to meet Perry around 9:30 p.m. The parents were not shot until somewhere around 10:10 p.m. that night. In what way is either of those two people an alibi?
You know, I think people like to make this argument that they came up with this elaborate story to tell the police that night, and that clearly they had planned this to the point that they were, right, to the point that they were, had all this planned out to say to them. But, like, that, I feel like that wouldn't be that hard.
No, like, I mean, what were the things that they had to remember? Went to the movies to watch Batman, right?
Yeah.
That's point number one. Second point would be...
they left out the back.
They left out the back because they were worried that someone had seen them leave out the front. Yeah. And then third, I think there was a third. I can't remember what it is, though, exactly.
Oh, that they came back to the house to get Eric's ID.
Yeah, that's it. That's all they have to remember. That's their alibi story. Not really much of an alibi when they don't really have proof.
When they have no movie tickets.
Yeah.
What's so interesting to me about it is, like, most of what they told the police was true.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, it was just the, like, sort of like the motivation behind the actions that wasn't true. Like, going back to the house.
Yeah, what they told the police was basically them sort of twisting the truth in a way. So that it wasn't really hard. Like, I think this sort of goes to your point about how it really wasn't that hard for them to have come up with this fake story to tell the police, because they are essentially telling the police half-truths.
Right.
So it's not really hard to come up with on the spot.
I mean, honestly, just the fact that they didn't meet their friend that night, and they readily admit to the fact that they didn't meet their friend. No one saw them that night. Like, they didn't have an alibi. That alone should have been a huge hint to the police.
Yep. I have no idea how they didn't suspect the brothers immediately. I think that about covers it for the alibi. Because, I mean, it's not really an alibi, but... I feel like before talking about the actual interview, though, with Sergeant Edmonds, you could talk about the brother's behavior.
Yeah.
When the police first arrived on the scene, both brothers were pretty hysterical. Eric more so. Eric was rolling around on the floor, sort of like a child, and hitting his head against a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So pro-prosecution people like to play this off as if, oh, he was acting. But maybe he was just genuinely traumatized. I mean, in the 911 call as well, you can hear Eric screaming in the background.
Yeah. What had happened is that they went, when they first went into the house, Eric went into the room and started screaming, and then Lyle pulled him out. And then Eric went upstairs to call Mark, and Lyle went upstairs to call the police. And I guess during the call, Eric must have gone back down, and then Lyle was screaming at him to get out of the room.
Okay, we're on our way over there with an ambulance.
Okay, I gotta go.
Okay.
can tell on that 911 call, they don't get many murders in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Because it takes them like 2 minutes to finalize who has been killed, even though that's pretty much all Lyle says for the first 2 minutes of the call is like, someone killed my parents, my mom and dad were shot, blah, blah, blah. But they're still like 2 minutes in, like, who shot who?
Yeah, you can tell the operator really doesn't know what she's doing, especially in these sort of situations.
Yeah, and she gets kind of like panicked in a way. I mean, I think if the brother's behavior, what that really shows to me as in terms of like how it relates to why they should have been caught, I think the police just didn't think that someone would be upset after killing their parents. You know what I mean?
But they play it off as if like the brothers were acting. What do you think in terms of the people who say that their 911 call is evidence that they can easily lie?
There's definitely validity to that argument. But I feel like thinking about the testimony of the brothers, I think you can tell on that tape that the emotion behind it is genuine. And, you know, Lyle says in his testimony, like, he was just overcome with the fact that they had just killed their parents. And that is an incredibly intense and emotional thing. And I think that comes through on the tape, which is very different than how he sounds when he's crying and testifying about the sexual abuse, for example. I think you can really hear like the almost like adrenaline and just like breaking down in that tape, in the 911 tape, that is very genuine. And I think that's why people believe they're such good liars, but it's like the emotion behind it was real.
Yeah, that's how I see it as well. It's not exactly surprising that they would be emotional and genuinely traumatized after the night's events.
Going by the brothers' story, I can imagine they were traumatized, you know, from the events of that week. And like, Lyle even says this in his testimony, like, he was just so stressed. It just like, he just like broke.
Yeah. And if we're going to talk about the brothers acting, why wasn't Lyle acting in his interview with Sergeant Edmonds?
Yeah.
He wasn't crying. He wasn't particularly emotional during that interview. So it's a bit like, if he wanted to fake being traumatized, why didn't he just continue to be upset and crying in his interview with Sergeant Edmonds afterwards?
Right.
But aside from this, is like we could go into like Lyle telling or asking, or if we're going by the brother's testimony, Lyle saying to Eric beforehand, like, look, if you go in there and tell them that we're responsible, I want you to tell me.
I think it was on the way to the police station that Lyle asked Eric if he was going to be able to stick with their story, basically.
Yeah.
And then Eric said, like, he would tell him if he couldn't, or he would let him know, sort of.
Yeah.
So
that's why Eric went in for the interview first, right?
Yeah, right.
But he wanted Lyle with him, or Mark with him, at the time, I think.
Did he testify to that? I'm not sure. I'm sure he did, but yeah. Yeah, because I mean, in Eric's interview, you can really tell how he's falling apart.
I mean, how long did it last before, like, Edmonds is like, let's cut it short?
Oh, God, no more than 15 minutes. Probably closer to 10.
Depends. What is the gist of what Eric says?
He tells the story, because I remember in Eric's direct, Leslie saying, like, essentially, like, were there three things you were supposed to remember to say in the interview? I guess the brothers had gone over those three points. It was the seeing Batman at 8, going out the back, that they came home because Eric needed a fake ID. Was that it?
I think so.
And that's honestly, that's basically what Eric says in this interview.
And then he's crying for like a lot of it as well, right?
Yeah, he sounds very emotional like the whole time, and he just gets more and more emotional. Actually, one part I marked down from that interview was toward the middle. Edmonds asks Eric, like, do you have any ideas about this? And there's just a really long pause.
Yeah, Eric, like, stops talking, doesn't he?
Yeah, and then he starts crying and talking about how there was blood everywhere, and he says, like, I just don't understand, or something like that.
Do you have any ideas on this at all? That it's going to help us catch the people? The person?
I literally wrote down, though, Edmonds ignores Eric's babbling.
Do you think he was close to, like, confessing right there, like, during that pause?
I think he was. Yeah. Oh, one other thing from Eric's interview is that he says he smelled smoke when he came back to the house.
Which he could not possibly have done if he was not there when the shooting actually occurred.
Right. I think Dr. Burgess says this, that it's like he's placing himself at the crime scene. Or at the time that the crime was committed with that sentence.
So you've got someone that you're interviewing. His parents have just been murdered with... And you're pretty sure the weapons used were shotguns. And he says to you, like, I can still smell the smoke. How does it not click in his head? Wait, how could you have smelled the smoke if you weren't there when the guns were fired? Because the smoke dissipates pretty quickly, and the windows were broken out, which means there would have been a draft going through the den, so the smoke would have dissipated even faster. So how did Edmonds not think, wait, that's not possible. You couldn't have smelled the smoke. Unless you were there when the shooting occurred.
I will say that I think Edmonds hadn't gone to the crime scene yet, but that's still a massive red flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty much Eric's interview. he sticks to the story pretty much. And then Edmonds asks him, when you left the house, was anyone else around? And Eric starts crying so heavily that Edmonds just ends the interview.
Is that appropriate? Like, really? Are we really just going to end a police interview because someone is crying too much? Like, yeah, I get he's traumatized, but...
Yeah.
You're trying to get information out of someone who was at the crime scene. You don't just end the interview early because he's sad. Okay, well, sad is a bit of an understatement. I mean traumatized, but you know what I mean.
I know.
I shouldn't be laughing because it's not a funny matter, but...
It's not funny, but it...
The incompetence of the police is what is funny.
Sometimes you just have to laugh because otherwise it's too sad.
Yeah, this case is so depressing, you have to laugh sometimes. So then that's the end of Eric's interview. Then Eric walks out and says to Lyle, it's okay, you can talk to him now.
In front of Sergeant Edmonds.
I don't understand. How did Sergeant Edmonds not hear that and think, wait, what? Surely if they had planned this all out from the start, Eric would not have needed to have said that.
Right. And if they were so prepared and so cold and calculating that they had created this story in advance, then Eric wouldn't have needed to confirm with Lyle that he didn't break.
Exactly, yeah.
Even from just the perspective of, like, trying to figure out who did this, right? Why would Eric need to tell Lyle that it was okay to talk to the police officer if everything they were saying was true?
Like, it sounds almost like a sort of like a protective thing in a way. Like, it's okay, you can talk to him. But why would you need to say that if you were the traumatized sons who had just walked in on your parents' dead bodies after they've been murdered? Of course you're going to want to talk to the police and help them to catch whoever the killer is.
Right.
So what would be the need for you to say to your brother, it's okay, you can talk to him?
Like, reassuring your brother that it's okay to talk to the police.
Like, that right there is a big red flag. Like, how did the police not hear that and think,
That's the thing that, to me, is like, they just had no clue. Honestly, part of me wonders if, like, listening back to these interviews in the courtroom, if the detectives that were there were just like, oh my god, we screwed up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure at the time there's so much like, okay, I was gonna say, like, you know, in the moment you don't notice a lot of things, but like, that's their job.
I mean, like, they're not even just hints. Like, it goes beyond just hints, in my opinion. Like, it's so clear. Like, you don't have to be a therapist to, like, hear what they're saying and sort of piece the quotes together and say, something's not lining up here.
Okay, so then Lyle goes in. And literally within the first 15 seconds, he says, and I wrote this down because I hadn't caught it before. He says, we wanted to go see a movie. And then he like pauses for a second. And then he says, and we went to do that.
Oh, yeah. It's almost as if, like, after he first says that initial statement, it almost sounds like he could then go into what actually happened, but then he stops himself. It's like he was thinking about it in his head and then stopped himself and then changed to the story that him and Eric had sort of come up with.
Right. That's exactly what I think happened. Because if they had actually gone, like, if they had actually gone to the movies, he would have just said, we went to the movies, instead of we wanted to go see a movie. Lyle also mentions smelling smoke in his initial interview. Like, both of them are placing themselves at the time the crime was committed.
Did Edmonds reply to Lyle saying that?
Not at first. He follows up on it later. Because Lyle's interview is longer. Lyle's interview is like, it's like 40 minutes. So there's a lot more. And there's a lot more hints that he drops. Right after he says that he smelled smoke is when he makes the statement that he talks about going to see Perry, but Perry had left. And so he called him and he says, I was a little bit upset, so I told Perry I needed to see him. I mean, come on. I was a little bit upset. Why?
Why were you upset before you found your parents dead?
Honestly, like I definitely think Eric would have been more likely to, you know, break from the story. But there are so many moments when Lyle almost does in this interview that, like, if Edmonds had asked him, why were you a little bit upset? I kind of wonder if he would have just said, you know, if it had caught him off guard.
Yeah, maybe. Or I think what probably would have happened is that Lyle would have started to, like, fluster.
Yeah.
And then that would be the moment when Edmonds would realize that, like, he's bullshitting.
Right. Oh, so after he says, I was a little bit upset, then Edmonds asks him, like, why did you go by the house? And Lyle takes a really long time to answer. But then he says it was to get Eric's ID.
I mean, that's just him sticking to the story. Like, the points that they had remembered.
Right. But I do think he, like, had to, you know, he had to remember that that was a point that they had stuck to. And then pretty much right after that, Edmonds starts to get into, like, who Lyle thinks could have done this. And he says something like, we're going to have to get personal. And Lyle says, I don't want any bad press about my father now.
Do you have any ideas on this that's going to help us solve it? We have to get personal, you understand. If there's any problems, we've got to solve this. One of my concerns is that I don't like any bad press about my father now. We're not reporters, we're policemen.
Which is interesting because I think a lot of people, when they hear that, think like, oh, that's Lyle preparing to say that it was Jose's seedy business connections. But what prompts him to say that is Edmund saying that they have to get personal. I think he was actually thinking about Jose's abuse of Eric.
And that's why he immediately jumps to, like, wanting to protect his father's image.
Right. Anyways, but then after Lyle talks about that, or makes that statement, then Edmonds basically says, like, we're not the press. This isn't going to get out. This is just for us.
What do you tell us stays inside this room until it goes to court and we prosecute the people? We want these people, or person, whoever did this, to answer for their crimes. So you've got to help us.
And honestly, like, I feel like if Edmonds hadn't made statements like that, like, Lyle might have cracked, you know? But Edmonds was being so, like, persistent that this person was a horrible person who had done this, you know?
Yeah. I think that kind of links with Lyle's testimony about how on the drive to back to the house, he felt no comfort from Eric, and he felt that Eric was bad and that what he had done was bad, and he didn't want to be with Eric. That's the way sort of Lyle describes it in his testimony. I thought that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now that makes sense. And then to have like the police officer almost essentially confirming that by being like, the person that did this is bad. Then it's like, why is Lyle going to be like, yeah, I'm that person. I'm that bad person.
Yeah.
Arrest me. Wait. Oh, yeah. So then, sort of after Edmonds is like, "This, you have to help us," Lyle starts kind of rolling through like all the possible options and then rejecting them. Like he says, like, "I don't think my mother would have been the cause," or something like that. And then that it wouldn't have been a robbery. Oh, he says, "It looked like they really wanted to make a mess."
What do you make of that?
It's so interesting. I don't know. He was saying it in the context of like, it wasn't a like, it didn't look like a robbery because it was a mess. So maybe.
I did wonder why Pam didn't question him on that comment, because she does say, she brings up that quote in her cross-examination of Lyle, but she doesn't press him on it at all. It would have been interesting to see like Lyle say something about it in his testimony, but he never did.
Yeah. Side note, I think Pam could have gone a lot harder on Lyle.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, I mean, I have issues with Pamela Bozanic, but honestly, I thought she could have done way better in her cross-examination of Lyle. It's like she was holding back, kind of.
After he says that it looked like they wanted to make a mess, then he says, like, it would be my father that would be the reason for this, and then talks about Jose's seedy business connections. But then he says, like, but I don't know if they would have tried to kill him. Which is like, he's clearly not 100% blaming it on someone else.
Hmm. He kind of takes it back in the same sentence.
And then he says that his parents had never gotten along well, and that Jose is stressed out at work all the time and takes it out on Kitty.
He's starting to show that there's problems in the family.
Yeah. Like, the use of the phrase "takes it out on her" is so obviously physical abuse.
What do you think Lyle was thinking when he said that, though? Because it's not actually relevant to anything that Edmonds asked him.
Well, I think it was right around when he was talking about Jose's like business involvement. So I think it had to do with that.
What, like Jose's work-related things was stressing him out, and then he took it out on Kitty.
Right. Oh, then he starts talking about how Jose wanted to be the senator of Florida, and that he was a great man and he did what he wanted.
He was a great man, yeah.
I mean, Jose did do what he wanted.
He did.
Until finally someone said no to him. Which, I mean, I guess that would... The big no would have been when Lyle confronted him, right?
Right.
I was like, hey, you got to stop molesting Eric. But no one ever says no to Jose.
Yeah. And then Lyle makes the statement that his mother was the great tragedy in all of this. He says because she didn't get to do anything with her life. And then he says, again, I don't think my dad treated her very well. So, hinting at problems in the family.
He's talking about problems in the family, and Edmonds doesn't pick up on it at all.
Literally at all. There's a worse one later. This one, where Lyle brings up that his mother bought a rifle, and he says that only Eric and he know this, but that she was suicidal, even though she's been more stable recently. And then he says, my dad's been fine, but... And then he kind of pauses and then he's like, I don't know. I never really got a chance to sit down and talk to him about all this.
My mother...
Sirens are blaring.
Yeah, talk to him about what?
And literally no hesitation, Edmund says, when you got home, did you move anything in the room?
I mean, this whole case is just people who don't listen to Eric and Lyle. They're saying things and people aren't listening to them.
To me, that's the biggest hint that was dropped and missed by Edmunds. I mean, when you have someone telling you that, like, essentially he's telling you a family secret. And you're just not going to ask him about it?
But then I guess some people would just say, well, they should have confessed on that same night.
I think they would have if the police had been trying harder.
I don't even think the police had to try that hard either. I think if they were just a little bit more aggressive with them.
If the police had been open to it.
Mm.
You know, if the police had been open to the idea that the brothers did it, they would have been caught that night.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then that's after that. After a bit, he says that thing about Kitty was on the floor like she was trying to get away. And that's pretty much it. From Lyle's first interview.
If they were acting, well, let's take Lyle, for example. If you were to say that he's acting on the 911 call and he was acting when the police officers arrived because he was crying hysterically, I don't think he was as emotional as Eric, but he was still pretty messed up.
Mm-hmm.
But then in his police interview, he's not crying. He's not particularly emotional. He does get emotional at certain points, but like it's not like he's trying to fake it in the police interview. If he was acting, why wouldn't he have continued crying in his police interview? Yeah. So after the the police interviews, the brothers went back to Mark Heffernan's house, where I'm assuming like Mark said, like, come stay with me or something. So they went along with that. And then at around 5 a.m., Lyle, after not sleeping, I don't think he really slept at all. It clicked in his head that, oh, crap, we left evidence in our car. I need to do something about it.
At some point, you left the police station. Is that correct?
Yes.
And did you realize later that you had left something back at the house or near the house that could show that you were the ones who killed your parents?
Yes. The car was going to have wrappings from when we bought it or extra shells or whatever. I mean, I just had not had time or the light even to search it real well at the gas station. It's kind of like a frenzied thing trying to get to Perry's. I hadn't really thought about it like I did. And then that night I said, oh, I thought we were going to jail.
So then they walked up to the house and Detective Zola was waiting there. And they asked Detective Zola, we need to get some tennis equipment for my house, right?
Shouldn't that have been a red flag?
I mean, Zola says that now. He says, oh, that was my first clue that something was amiss. But it took you, like, what, 7 more months to figure out it was there.
It's so ridiculous.
They make those comments to Zola, and then Zola says, sorry, come back another time. And I think the brothers, like, went off somewhere.
Oh, that's right. And they came back later in the day.
Yeah.
In the morning.
And when they came back in the morning, there must have been a police officer there, and I think they asked to basically have access to the car. The police officer, for some reason, it's an active crime scene, allows them to go through the car, but he doesn't go with them. He just sort of lets them have access to it. He doesn't see what they're doing. And this is when the brothers take the time to, I can't remember which brother it was exactly, but one of them basically went through the car and took out a bunch of empty shell casings and receipts and things like that, which would have proven that they were the shooters.
So did you get back into the car?
I did.
And did you find any other wrappings or shells or anything?
The guy let me search the car to just get a few things, and I was able to do a pretty good job. And I did find quite a few things.
And did you take them?
Yes.
And those things were all in the car at the point in time that you called the police the night before?
Yes.
These two kids' parents have been killed here last night, not that many hours ago. And they're back and going looking for things in their car. What would the brothers have done if the police just told them right then and there, no, you're sorry, you're not allowed to access the crime scene or anything around it?
I mean, they just would have been arrested, right?
They have waited, or would they have just turned themselves in straight away? Because they would have knew they were screwed.
I don't know. Because the car was taped in, right? So they wouldn't have let them, like, take the car somewhere.
No.
If they were conducting a proper investigation.
Surely one of the police officers, like, was watching them from a distance as they went through this car. Like, what were they thinking? Like,
it's just ridiculous.
It is. It's ridiculous. I mean, it also speaks to a lack of planning as well. By the brothers, yeah.
Right. Like, what kind of plan involves leaving shotgun shells in your car when you call the police to the scene? You know, people like to say, like, oh, they were adults. But no, they weren't. Like, Eric was 18. I mean, legally, that's an adult. I don't consider 18-year-olds adults. I don't consider myself an adult. Like, the fact that they were fooled by an 18-year-old and a 21-year-old speaks more to the police incompetence than it does to the brother's skills.
I think the police were just naive as well, because they had never experienced something like this before.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, guys. Next time, we'll be delving into the spending habits of the brothers post-crime, because that is a big thing that comes up in a lot of documentaries, and it's usually brought up as evidence of the brothers having planned the crime to inherit the parents' wealth. So we'll be discussing that a lot next time.
Yeah, and if you have any questions you have about this episode, feel free to leave it in the comments, or if you have any topics you want to hear us discuss in future episodes, you can drop that down below as well.
So yeah, thanks for listening.